Welcome to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers here live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. The crowd is going wild as usual. We're here every Tuesday night, and of course you're listening to this on WDCB 90.9 FM and also on ChicagoJazz.com. I'm excited to have on the show tonight on Chicago Jazz Revealed, Scott Hall, the Director of Jazz Studies from Columbia College in Chicago, and world-famous musician, harmonica player, harmonicaist. I don't think that's a word, but I'm making it up. Corky Siegel has joined us, and we're here to talk about the Celebrating William Russo Artist and Educator Performance and Symposium coming up on December 6th and 7th at Columbia College. And first off, thanks, guys, for coming in, and I am... You know, we had Bill Russo on the cover of Chicago Jazz Magazine years and years ago, and I know that he is somebody that means a lot to both of you, but why don't we just start off a little bit, get some background about William Russo for the listeners that might not be completely familiar with who he was, and how important he was to actually the jazz program at Columbia College, because he, unless I'm wrong, I think he started it back in the 60s, didn't he?
He started the music department.
The music department, yeah. Okay.
Back in those days, it was a very small school, Columbia College, you know, a few hundred students. And so Bill was working in London at the time. This is before 1965, and he was leading the London Jazz Orchestra. And, of course, he's from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And he was asked by Mike Alexandrov, who was the president of the college at the time, if he would be interested in moving back to Chicago and teaching at the college. So Bill was actually, he accepted the job at some point in 1965. He was hired as the first full-time faculty member of the college.
Oh, he was the first full-time faculty member. Wow.
Yeah, so very historical moment.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that they brought a musician in to be the first full-time faculty employee.
And the thing is about that is that there are so many musicians at the college, either as faculty in the music department or faculty in all the other departments, or even all the way to the top. Our former president, Warwick Carter, was a musician. Mm-hmm. Our current president, Dr. Kim, is a musician. So it's interesting that you say that because there are a lot of musicians on campus.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even realize that. And talking about him coming in, now he was with the London Jazz Orchestra when they brought him over, but he was with Stan Kenton for a while in the
50s. He was with the Stan Kenton Orchestra starting in the early 50s and playing trombone in the section, but he was already composing music and started writing for the band. And he composed and arranged works that were recorded by the Stan Kenton Orchestra for many, many years.
So when he came in, just from everything I've read about him, and I know that you are the wealth of knowledge here because I've...
Yeah, 2 cents.
Well, it seems like he started the music program and eventually just went, you know, straight into the jazz and wanted to start an ensemble similar to what he had probably with the London Jazz Orchestra at the college.
Well, actually, when he started the Chicago Jazz Ensemble at the same time, 1965.
Okay.
So it was a part of what he was doing with his work at the college. But he became frustrated with jazz in general and actually disbanded the group and moved away from jazz for many, many years. So actually in the 60s, while there was an influence, there was a jazz influence in the department at the very beginning, he moved away from that.
Why do you think that was? What was his frustration?
He, you know, Bill was a very intellectual, very artistic person. He was not your normal jazz person. And not to belittle jazz musicians, but he was more, his approach to music and to life had a lot more to do than just improvising over tunes. And he was a very serious composer. And he just didn't like the direction that things were going with jazz. He thought as though jazz musicians were not performing to the audience. And that because of that, the music was suffering.
More playing for themselves rather than...
Exactly. And think about what was going on in the mid-60s. I won't even mention names. But the music was going in that direction for the, for good or bad, and he didn't want anything to do with it. So he actually moved towards more of rock and roll. He was involved in the Free Theater here in Chicago, and the music that was involved in that was basically pop music, rock and roll.
Really?
And he was writing rock operas in the early 70s.
Really?
So he was distant from the jazz world for many, many years.
Now, Corky, you're shaking your head when Scott's talking about Bill and everything. Now, how did you first meet Bill? What's your relationship with Bill?
Well, it was in 65,
okay.
And I was brought over to the his jazz ensemble at Columbia College, you know, to listen to them. I had a friend, Roberta Jacobs, who was playing cello in the jazz ensemble, and her husband was Jay Jacobs, who is the son of the brass Arnold Jacobs from the Chicago Symphony. Okay. And so we were all friends, and we really became very friendly with Bill Russo and, you know, loved his thinking. And he, you know, would show up to Big John's, where Jim and I were playing in the Siegel Schwall Blues Band.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, this fella comes. He's coming in night after night. This one person who, like, was a major fan of Siegel Schwall, night after night, you know, for weeks. And he'd stay all night, you know, till early in the morning. And one night he came up to me and he said, Corky, I would like your band to jam with my band. And so I said, well, what's your band? And he said, the Chicago Symphony. And he was Seiji Ozawa.
Oh, wow.
So he wanted to get a composer because, you know, as Bill said, he didn't like what was happening with jazz. Seiji didn't like what was happening with classical.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
And so Seiji said the classical music needs a new spark, and he thinks since classical music always followed a tradition, you know, looking at the folk traditions of the time and bringing that into the music, he thought blues was an amazing folk tradition and it should be utilized. And so they wanted a composer, and we had met Bill Russo, and we knew he had also composed The Titan, you know, for Leonard Bernstein.
Yep. Right.
And we thought he'd be the perfect one. And so 1966, Bill and I and Seiji got together and started working on a piece that eventually was premiered in 1968 with the Chicago Symphony. And from that moment, a whole career for me was handed to me on a silver platter in terms of juxtaposing blues and classical.
Mm-hmm.
So what I can say about the piece and about Bill and the whole approach was neither Seiji, I, or Bill wanted to have the symphony be a backdrop in any way to a blues band. We wanted to create a piece that was actually a juxtaposition of the two.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on the surface, it appears like it's crossover. Here's a blues band playing with the symphony, but that's not really what it was about. It was about taking the blues element and trying to maintain its character, but also have the symphony play a classical character and maintain that, and find ways of having the two work together.
Yeah.
The two forces of blues and classical to actually not blend or meld, but actually work side by side together. And there's many different ways to do it. And the pieces that William Russo wrote, he was fearless and did something that really we think nobody has really done like that before. And actually, I can't think of too many examples of a juxtaposition of blues and classical.
No, I was going to say, I mean, you know, when you, even nowadays, you know, you hear something and you've got the strings or you've got something else, but you're right, there's a blues band or a rock band and they're backed up with an orchestra. How big of an influence, I mean, was it Bill Russo who really took charge of the project, or did everybody kind of give inputs and stuff? Because it seems like he kind of took charge of the situation maybe with the writing, or...
Well, he was the composer.
I mean, the concept of the whole thing. Yeah,
he was the composer. But, you know, a great tribute to Bill is that he was constant, you know, that we really worked together. You know, obviously we wanted to make sure it was something that me and the band could play.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to work that way. And he also relied on the sensibilities and the sensitivities of playing blues and what it means. And he often talked about that he relied on me for the drama, you know, in the piece, and you know, so it's a tribute to, you know, a composer who's working with a soloist to really try and make the piece work in every yeah. way possible, and nobody, you know, I mean, to do something like, I mean, I've read articles about other pieces like that where in the article they said no one will ever be able to present blues with a symphony. It's never going to work. And they're still saying that to this day. you know, when he was writing the second piece, by the way, the piece, you know, went platinum. They recorded it on Deutsche Grammophon platinum. And what I want you to think about is how this piece affected the world of music. Millions of people have that record
yeah.
that never knew about blues, that never heard the
right,
blues.
Right.
And when we went and performed with all the symphonies, the major symphonies of the world, the audience members, for the most part, did not know about the blues. And this was their introduction. And they'd go check out Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters because of that record.
Well, you know, I mean, and we're talking about 1966, mm-hmm. 1967. I mean, just think about from there all the way up till now, and the fact that Bill Russo and yourself and everybody else involved in that project put that together back then, and that really hasn't been duplicated since, right?
Well, you would think it should have been since sure. it sold so well. It was such a commercial
right.
success. And I've been doing the chamber blues thing. It's been yeah. extremely successful. But, you know, I realize, you know, it takes, you know, someone to devote a career to doing something that, you know, if they're a jazz player or a jazz composer, they're not going to want to, you know, stop doing that to do something else.
Right.
And the same if they're a classical composer. For me, it was just handed to me on a silver platter, and it became what I do. But I just quickly to tell you, the second piece, Street Music, that Bill composed, we were in San Francisco, and he was just finishing the piece, and this is way before computers. And we're in the car, and we met Seiji Ozawa, and we're eating in an Italian restaurant. And all of a sudden, Bill said, you know what? I better go get my briefcase out of the car because the score is in there. And again, these were the days. You didn't have copies of the thing, so he really didn't want to leave it in the car, right? So I said, I'll walk you back to the car. So we walk back to the car, and the window of the car is broken, and the briefcase is gone. And Bill just looks at me, and there's silence. And then he says, it'll be better the second time.
Oh, man.
And this is a little inside of the heart of William Russo. He was really a brilliant.
Well, now, Scott, we've got a tune, right, that we can play now that with Corky. Why don't you set that up? Maybe this is a good time to take a listen to
sure.
that.
Well, I brought this recording because it's a piece that Bill wrote to feature Corky. We used to play this with Chicago Jazz Ensemble, and this was Bill's Chicago Suite number 2, and some of the titles from that suite are Wicker Park, Argyle Street, trying to remember all the titles, mm-hmm. but they were all just, you know, things in Chicago, Corky being one of them. And we recorded this for an album. It was mixed and mastered just before he got sick again, mm-hmm. and it never was released.
So it's never been released.
It's never been released.
You know, real quick before we take a listen to it, Corky, when you were working with the Chicago Jazz Ensemble mm-hmm. later after, you know, after the 60s, back up in the 90s,
yeah.
Was it still that kind of same feel where you felt like everything was intertwined, or was it more along the lines as you're a soloist? Was Bill still writing, you know, that way?
Well, he was still writing that way. The thing is, you know, classical and blues are pretty much what we think of as opposite forces.
Right.
You know, they seem like,
sure.
wow. And, you know, just really quickly, the reason for that is because socially and intellectually, they seem different, but they're music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But jazz is already somewhat of a juxtaposition of blues and classical. It's already a blend and a meld of blues and
yeah.
classical. So, you know, you bring the blues into the jazz, it's sort of already a familiar element, and there's not so much of that opposite force thing happening.
Right, right. Well, let's take a listen now. What's the name of this song?
This is the finale from Chicago Suite Number 2, and it's called Corky.
Okay, let's take a listen here. Corky on 90.9 FM, WDCB, and ChicagoJazz.com.
And I've never heard this one. Never heard it before.
No? Well, here we go. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers. And we, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and ChicagoJazz.com. And what was the name of that tune, Scott?
So that was from the Chicago Suite Number 2 of Bill Russo's. It's the finale movement called Corky.
And we're here with Scott Hall, I should say, the director of jazz studies at Columbia College. And, of course, Corky Siegel. They have a big show coming up. It's actually the Celebrating William Russo Artist and Educator, December 6th and December 7th. We're going to have all the details posted on chicagojazz.com for the different programs throughout that weekend. But why don't we talk just a little bit about December 6th. I've got down there's a film screening of a... since it's an animated film, Everybody Rides the Carousel, and that's something that William Russo actually wrote the score for.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be able to hear that and see that on December 6th. And then December 7th in the afternoon at the college? At the college from 2 to 5 is a symposium. What is that going to entail?
Well, we're going to talk about his life as a musician, his life involved in theater here in Chicago, and his life as an educator. So it's three segments.
Okay.
And we have various people involved in the panel. Lee Konitz will be one of them, as well as Orbert Davis. And, you know, we're just going to have a discussion, and we hope to have a lot of people there that were fans of Bill's or people who know a lot about him to share in the discussion.
Well, and also something like that in the afternoon, even if you're just kind of getting familiar with William Russo, Bill Russo right now, the importance that he had on just composition in general for you know, classical arranging and jazz composition and everything. I mean, this is something that anybody should go check out if they're interested in, because, I mean, just the incredible amounts of things that he's done, did. You're going to discuss everything. And I always find it interesting when you can sit there and listen to people that knew him and hear the background story rather than just somebody sitting there educationally. Now, this is how he wrote this piece and this piece. It's really, I think, beneficial for everybody to go and listen and get the background, because that's how the person developed and that's how they developed their concepts. I mean, what do you think, Corky? Is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to feel that way. His composition attitude was needed in the world. He, you know, the Picasso of composition, you know. And, you know, for what he did for me, you know, I was asked to compose something for the San Francisco Symphony. I'm a blues guy, right? And I said, I can't do this. And Bill said, no, you can do it. You can do it. So he was my mentor. I started composing. And, you know, in my all the pamphlets that come out at the concerts, I always, you know, credit Bill with everything, and I owe my life, my musical life, to Bill Russo. And so that's, you know, what I think of him. You know,
yeah.
Let's start there and move backwards from there. So you know, he was my mentor, my friend, and you know, basically, I feel like I'm living his life and continuing with the compositions. I mean, I can't compose like he did, but in my own way, you know, he was my mentor and chamber blues and the success of that and the symphonic pieces that I'm writing, that people are telling me no one in the world writes like this. Well, that's understandable. I'm a blues guy. But right. That all came from William Russo, and I credit him with everything.
You know, that's something that's really interesting to me is I didn't realize how huge of an influence he was on you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kind of take a look at, I mean, just looking through this, you know, Scott, you gave me this Chicago Jazz Ensemble program from 2001 and William Russo Chicago Suite Number 2. And you just kind of look at who was in the band back then. And then you kind of think about all of the different musicians that were in his bands. I mean, it's mind-boggling,
right?
The influence that he had, you know, for not only Chicago music, and Chicago jazz, but I mean probably throughout the world. All of the different people that passed through his ensembles or even came in as featured artists and played his arrangements, I'm sure they all took something away from him, from it like that.
It's a very, very long list of some very famous people and some others that are just working musicians. And, you know, he was a very demanding person, and people really respected that of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we gave everything we had for him in his music. And I said the word serious before. He was very serious. He expected all of us to carry ourselves in that manner. For me, I mean, you're pouring out your emotions for Bill. He did so much for me. It was unbelievable. He was my mentor, and he didn't even know it.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I worked for him. But he was really my mentor during the years. And it seemed like I had been around him for years and years. But when I think back now, I was really only around him for about 7 years. He made a huge impact on my life. And now I'm spreading that to my students at Columbia College.
Right. Well, I want to talk about the Columbia Jazz program and the music program where it is now. But why don't we back up a little bit as far as, you know, with you. Now, he restarted the Chicago Jazz Ensemble back in the 90s.
Late 80s, early 90s.
And you were around at the mid-portion of that?
I was finishing up undergraduate studies in 91. Then I was a grad student at DePaul for 2 years. So I was going to his concerts. I was not involved in the group at that time. But was admiring him. He was performing a lot of Duke Ellington music, and I was like, oh, I want to be a part of that. And,
yeah.
And sure enough, I get a call, you know, and changed my life. So, and back then, the music department at Columbia College was very small, mostly composition students. And after a few years of working with him, he started assigning me duties, you know. Scott, could you do this? Could you do that?
Yeah.
And I guess I would exceed his expectations, so he'd give me more assignments, this and that. And he saw that I would get results and eventually led to, you know, more opportunities. And he ultimately hired me full-time to develop the Jazz Studies program, which existed on paper, but in reality didn't really exist.
Mm-hmm.
So. And it was all through the mission of the Chicago Jazz Ensemble, in collaboration with the college. And it was heavy, what he was trying to accomplish.
Why don't we talk just with the Chicago Jazz Ensemble, because that was like a separate entity, basically, at the college. That was more of a performance group. I mean, why did he decide that all of a sudden he decided, okay, I'm going to start the ensemble up again? Because, I mean, he quit in 1968 or so with it, and then he decided it was time to start it up again. Something must have changed in his thinking or...
Well, it was around the time that the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, led by David Berger, actually originally, was basically performing repertoire of Duke Ellington for the most part. And at one point, Wynton Marsalis took over that group. And it was around that time that I think Bill realized that there was a place for him.
Right.
Because the Chicago Jazz Ensemble primarily performed a repertory of Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Stan Kenton.
Mm-hmm.
And little by little, Bill started composing, you know, in a jazz, for a jazz ensemble again.
Yeah.
And then he became very prolific. He was composing new music all the time. So I think is that he saw that there was a movement happening in terms of repertoire, repertory ensembles, and he wanted to be a part of that.
Okay. I mean, I bet that it's exactly how you did it, but you know what happens is that, especially as a musician and a composer, you start something and you're performing other people's music, and all of a sudden your juices get flowing and everything starts pouring out, and it seems like he had so much bottled up inside of him to start writing again. I mean, it's amazing how much material he actually composed for that group.
It was more than 20 years that he hadn't been involved in this music. So I wish Orbert was here tonight. I, you know, invited him, but he couldn't make it, because he would be able to talk really specifically about that era before I became a part of Bill's life. And, but, you know, come to the symposium.
Right. See, right? There's our teaser. It's our
because
teaser.
Because this, we're going to be talking about this. You know, the other thing that I'm hoping to benefit is that we will start to utilize Bill's ideas about teaching, mm-hmm. his philosophy for education, because for the last 10 years, we kind of just put it away. You know, we didn't do it on purpose. It just happened.
Right.
And so now, thanks to Bill Williams at Columbia College in the theater department and Norm Alexandroff, who's the son of Mike Alexandroff, who hired Bill Russo mm-hmm. in 65, it was really the two of them that got this project going in terms of the Russo celebration. So our students have a lot to benefit from being exposed to Bill's music and his way of life, and we've built this wonderful website around this event that's going to be out there for the rest of our lives.
Sure. And that last tune we heard, Corky, that has never been released, so hopefully some of the archival things can start coming out of that as well.
And absolutely. We're going to perform that piece with the Columbia College Jazz Ensemble. So it's another thing is that Bill hired me to create this ensemble. So he mm-hmm. and I, we worked on it together. We co-taught this ensemble. I helped recruit students to the college. And eventually he surrendered it to me. And I remember having a conversation with him at his house about what did he see that I should be doing. And he said, well, you're a good leader. You're a good band leader. You should,
right.
That should be your focus. And it has been my focus for mm-hmm. all these years.
Well, and now, I mean, Columbia College, you have an artist in residence program.
Absolutely.
You have how many jazz studies students do you have?
We have 50 jazz studies students.
On all different instruments.
Yes, mostly the normal instruments, you know,
right.
for jazz, but we also have vibraphonists, we have violinists, singers. Mm-hmm. So it's very open.
And how's the curriculum? Is the curriculum based off of a conservatory thing, or is it mainly based out of a regular structure? You know, all the different ways that things can be structured out.
I would say what we're really trying to accomplish is we're trying to create the sense of what jam sessions were about and people coming by to play with each other, because we're teaching repertoire through listening and transcribing, and not so much out of a book.
Right.
And I can say that when I was a classical trumpet major studying jazz, that a lot of it was coming out of a book,
mm-hmm.
and we're not doing that. We're trying to recreate the way the scene was when music was 24/7.
Sure.
And sometimes it's still like that around here in Chicago and other cities, but it's not like it used to be. So the environment that we're creating at Columbia is this sort of safe haven where students can make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And learn from each other, not just from the teachers, but from each other. And so it's really based on repertoire, and the new Bachelor of Music program in Jazz Studies is moving in a direction where students will be composing and producing their own CDs, their
yeah.
own projects by the end of 4 years.
Getting more real-life opportunities.
Absolutely.
And Corky can speak great to this, I'm sure, mm-hmm. too. I mean, as a professional musician touring all over the world, I mean, you run into people that have, you know, degrees in music and doctors in music and everything, but how important is it just to play and know what you do? I know, it's like, what a concept, right? Just to go and play and start playing.
It's amazing because my approach to music is a little bit different because I had some, hurdles that I had to get over. So I had to find a different way of approaching music. And for me, it's always been about expression. And the book thing couldn't possibly work for me. But what's interesting to tie it into William Russo is in 1973, he asked me to come and do a two-week course at Columbia College, 5 hours a day for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, well, what do you want me to, you know, share? And he said, well, whatever you want. But at the end of the 2 weeks, the people have to perform. And so I just went in there thinking about, well, we're just going to do one thing and one thing only, and that's expression. And what came out of that two-week workshop was a mind blower. And I've been basically using the same thing that I brought in 1973, of course, quite expanded, all over the world. And it came from Bill Russo.
Wow.
And I wrote a book on the subject, and it's been like absolutely profound. And I had to write the book because I was afraid if I got hit by a bus, the whole thing would be lost. So this is all, you know, coming from William Russo. And the one thing I wanted to say about Scott is William Russo is somebody you want to be surrendered to. And when Scott was surrendered to Bill and understood Bill's greatness and went with it, mm-hmm. Bill surrendered to Scott. And I experienced the same thing with Bill because I was completely surrendered to him. Everything became carte blanche. I could do anything I wanted.
Yeah.
He could do anything he wanted. And we were, you know, a great team. And I think that's what happened with Scott. Is, you know,
absolutely.
You completely surrender to that greatness. And in turn, he surrendered back to Scott and created a great thing.
Yeah. Well, why don't we hear one more track, and
okay.
then we'll talk a little bit more. We're going to have the Jazz Combo, Jazz Quintet 1. What's the official title?
Yeah, Columbia College Jazz Combo 1 is coming to perform tonight.
Excellent. So we're going to hear some tracks from them, too. But what's this next tune we're going to hear?
So the other recording I brought is the famous recording from the Stan Kenton Orchestra of Bill's arrangement of Loverman. And the style in which Bill was writing for the band was very much his own. And this features Lee Konitz. And Lee Konitz, you know, he became very famous, and he continues to be a very active musician. So this is a really special recording and performance, Lee Konitz being featured on Loverman.
Here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB. We're back here for a few more minutes with Scott Hall, the Director of Jazz Studies from Columbia College in Chicago, and Corky Siegel. And I'm Mike Jeffers here at Chicago Jazz Revealed, live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. The crowd's getting crazy now. Everybody's got to calm down. So why don't we talk a little bit about the concert on December 7th for the weekend called Celebrating William Russo, Artist and Educator. The concert's going to be December 7th starting at 8 p.m. at the Jazz Showcase, Joan Wayne Siegel's Jazz Showcase. And it's going to feature Lee Konitz, who we just heard with the band, the Chicago Columbia College Jazz Ensemble, yourself directing it,
right.
And Corky Siegel and Orbert Davis. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the repertoire and about the flow of the evening?
You know, imagine a young Bill Russo and a young Lee Konitz going to high school together. They went to Sen High School here in the city. And they eventually became members of the Stan Kenton Orchestra together. And so I'm going to feature Lee Konitz on several of Bill's most famous works from that era. For that particular evening, so he will perform Loverman, he will perform My Lady, he will perform the solo on 23 Degrees North, 83 Degrees West. Am I saying that right? I think. sorry, Bill, if I don't remember the title. We're gonna feature Corky on the piece that we played earlier from Chicago Suite Number 2. And we also may feature him on a piece that Bill wrote called the Chicago Tribune Blues. I don't know if we're gonna pull that off, but we might.
Okay.
And some other things for Corky. And Orbert Davis, I remember he said, "Oh, I want to do the Hornblower." Well, Bill wrote this piece called The Hornblower just for Orbert, and we used to perform it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's this amazing, virtuosic piece for Orbert, as well as some other things. I think we're going to perform Blues Before and After, which is from the Kenton days with Orbert and some other pieces. So because we're going to do one set at 8 o'clock on December 7th, and we hope not to repeat material for the 10 o'clock set or the second set that night. But the other thing is that this concert is a part of our residency at the club that whole week. So we'll be, the Columbia College Jazz Ensemble will be at the club Thursday through Sunday with our residency guest, Lee Konitz. So Lee will join us on Monday, and he'll be in the classroom all week long. And then in the evenings, Thursday through Sunday, we'll be at the club. So we are also going to do some other music with Lee during the other nights.
The other nights, yeah.
With the students as well. So,
you know, just speaking real quickly about the residency program, and I know you and I have talked about this other times.
Sure.
When did you start that? Because what an opportunity for, you know, students to be able to. I mean, I know Bernard Purdy, one of my favorite drummers,
was just
there last week. And, I mean, you've had so many different artists coming in and spending a whole week with the kids.
Well, you know, it's kind of twofold. One is when the Jazz Showcase moved to the South Loop, that gave us the opportunity to invite guests into the college on Friday afternoons. We started a Jazz Forum series for all the students. And for the last 5 years, I would say, whoever's at the Showcase for the week, they're staying at the hotel across the street from the college. I made it very easy for them to come over and work with our students for an hour or two. So from those guests, we have been able to sort of determine the types of artists that we want to invite for an entire week. Some artists are great with students for a week, and others are not so great. And we've been able to determine who we like to work with.
Well, you know, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because they could be a great player, but being in front of students and working with students and actually explaining how you're the great player, it's different for different people.
That's true. So what we ended up doing is we used to use a lot of local artists to come into the school, and we stopped doing that, and we pooled our resources budget-wise so that we could bring big-name artists in for a week. We started off with Terrence Blanchard, you know, one of our first guests, and it was a collaboration with our film scoring program for the master's degree in the Jazz Studies program. Perfect, right?
Oh, what an opportunity for the film scoring kids to be able to work with Terrence Blanchard, not to mention the jazz
students,
you know?
You know, so, you know, after that we had Peter Erskine, we had Bob Minzer, we had Vincent Gardner, we had recently Barry Harris, we have Lee Konitz coming soon. I'm forgetting.
You had Todd Rundgren, didn't you?
We had Todd Rundgren last year.
I mean, you have a whole gamut of different
jazz,
people, right?
You know, because we have the contemporary urban popular music program at the college. Mm-hmm. I should say exists because of Bill Russo. I mean, mm-hmm. Bill Russo was open to all kinds of music. And I don't know of any other school anywhere in this area, Midwest, that allows popular music to be a part of the curriculum.
I'll tell you, we also, when Chamber Blues came to do a little thing there, we brought in Marcy Levy, Marcella Detroit, who toured with Eric Clapton and wrote Lay Down Sally and Aretha Franklin. And she came and did a songwriter a little workshop there.
I mean, what other colleges are doing that kind of stuff, you know? And it always amazes me because when you think about it logically, I mean, what's the most popular music in the world, right? I mean, you've got pop music, you've got blues, you've got, jazz is popular.
Polka.
Polka, yes. But, I mean, you know, it just makes sense to expose kids to, you know, the students to every kind of music.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, in Columbia has not been known for its classical studies, but we're working on that. We're working towards a different approach to classical studies, something that does combine all the different styles of music. And so, you know, look out.
Right, yeah.
It's coming.
Well, okay, so just one more little plug here. So December 6th, concert or the film screening at 6 p.m., and that's at the college. And then December 7th, you've got the symposium from 2 to 5 at the college. And then, of course, the big performance at night starting at 8 p.m. at the Jazz Showcase, which is at 106 South Plymouth Court in Chicago. And I'm sure that you have information if they do a search for Columbia College Jazz Studies. Everything will probably come up in Google.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not hard to find us.
Yeah, and then I'll have everything on ChicagoJazz.com, and more information will be on WDCB.org. And why don't we bring up the Columbia College Jazz Combo 1. We'll let them get set up, and we'll hear a tune or two from them. And thanks again, guys, for coming in. This is going to be a great weekend, and I'm really glad that we were able to work out everybody's schedule and get this thing together so that we can get the word out here on WDCB and Chicago Jazz Revealed. So thanks again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Mike.
And we'll be right back with some live music here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB. Support for WDCB and Chicago Jazz Revealed comes from the University of Chicago.